Blog Talk Radio.
If it's Sunday, it's Wrestling Night in America here on PWTorchDailyCast.com. Good Sunday evening for February 26th, 2023. I am Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks, and we're here previewing AEW Revolution, which takes place next Sunday night, which is where we'll be right here on Wrestling Night in America after Revolution goes off the air, taking your phone calls and emails about the show. So don't forget to check us out next Sunday night after AEW Revolution. We want to hear your reaction. 515-605-9345 is the number to call. WNIALivecast@gmail.com is the email to send your emails. And in fact, those are both of the ways you can reach us every week here on Wrestling Night in America. We're usually on the air 8 p.m. Eastern, as we are tonight, talking about the big shows in pro wrestling. Obviously, this time of year, we've got a lot of big shows to talk about, so we'll also hit on the road to WrestleMania, which is ramping up as well. And to join me to talk about these items and more, PWTorch.com contributor Kelly Wells. Kelly, thanks for joining me tonight here on Wrestling Night in America.
Hey, it's good to be here. I've had a real, real busy week. I only had one free night. It was tonight. So I said, what the heck? Why not jump on a podcast and talk a little bit of wrestling? I was going to be watching wrestling if I wasn't talking about it. So I guess it really doesn't matter.
I feel a little guilty stealing your one free night. I guess I'm honored, too, that you would choose to spend that with me. So thank you.
You know, I don't know. I would have wasted the time. I assure you, it wasn't going anywhere worthwhile. So I'm here talking wrestling. That's good enough.
All right. So we've got a couple email questions that we'll get to as we go through here tonight. But I want to start with the Revolution card. 7 matches announced. As always, I stipulate to the fact that we do have an episode of Dynamite and Rampage between now and next Sunday where things could be changed, added, subtracted from the card. So we'll all keep that in mind as we're talking about the build. I want to start with Jericho versus Ricky Starks. This is a match where the Jericho Appreciation Society is banned from ringside. So one of the themes that I think we'll talk about here tonight as we look over this card is top baby faces for 2023, because the top heel is a given. It's MJF. He's going to be the top heel for AEW this year and most likely for years to come, assuming that he's locked up with a contract extension and isn't, in fact, going to WWE when his contract is due. But on the babyface side, you've got guys like Jon Moxley. You've got guys like Bryan Danielson, who's challenging for the championship on Sunday. Their best years are probably behind them. Same with somebody like Kenny Omega. So when you're talking the list of potential babyface stars, babyface main eventers, who could take that leap in 2023, I think Ricky Starks is one of those names on the list. So am I wrong on that? Do you think it's, you know, am I overrating Starks? Do you think I'm, you know, pushing him a little too early? Maybe you see 2024. And then talk about what this feud with Chris Jericho has done for Starks' value in AEW.
If loving Starks too much is wrong, then I don't want to be right. I'm with you. I'm a big fan of Starks, and it seems like everywhere he goes, his value is recognized and they take care with him. He was in NWA when that was a good show for 5 minutes or whatever it was. And, he actually used one pay-per-view primarily to crown a new TV champion, and they built the entire pay-per-view around him. It was a tournament, so you didn't know how it was going to go. And so, you know, it's got one of the weirdest main events to a pay-per-view in history, Ricky Starks versus Trevor Murdoch. But Starks
wins somewhat of a style clash there.
A little bit, and you'd think it would be pretty bad, but they kept these matches pretty short, as NWA tended to do. But before the pandemic really bit them and they lost so many of the guys that they had put time into, it was clear that they understood his value as well. Putting a guy who can talk in there and throwing him into the deep end, having a war of words with somebody who has literally always been really, really strong. Well, yeah, gosh, I guess even at the beginning he was pretty decent, but he's been one of the best for decades now, Jericho, with this. I think that this has benefited him a lot, and it seems like Jericho really knows when it's good for business to put somebody over huge. So it'll be really interesting to see what they do with Starks beyond this, because he's not exactly homegrown, but they can trick a lot of people into thinking that he is, just because he was not known to this level. I mean, he could be a really, really recognizable AEW only star.
I think given what passes for homegrown stars in the women's division feud, I think Ricky Starks counts as homegrown in AEW.
Oh,
yeah. I mean, I'll be honest. I did not see Ricky Starks performing to this level. I liked Ricky Starks, but I didn't see him as like a standout either character or anything. I mean, obviously a really good wrestler, but AEW was full of really good wrestlers. So, you know, to me, you had to stand out above and beyond that. And I didn't see him necessarily getting to that. So I've been pleasantly surprised and really impressed with how he's come along here and how he's been able to break out in this Jericho feud.
Yeah, and I don't know whether to say I saw this out of him or not, because I felt that he could do it, but I wondered if maybe that was just the longtime fan in me. Plus, he was in NWA. He was a bigger fish in a much, much, much smaller pond.
Yeah.
So easier to get over in front of 200 people than it is a few more than 200. I've believed in him for a while, not the least of which because he used to like interact with me on Twitter. Before he got real big, I was able to talk to him while we were doing the podcast, and he knew who I was. But yeah, he's. I'd love to say I saw this coming, but I was definitely. I was interested to see how he'd fare in front of a much bigger crowd.
So another one of the names on the list for top babyface potentially for 2023, at least a few months ago, was Wardlow, and he is challenging Samoa Joe, the king of television, for AEW's TNT Championship. Wardlow had his head shaved. He spoke to Jim Ross in a sit-down interview a couple weeks ago about what the ponytail meant to him, what the shaving of the head meant to him. And Wardlow was a guy, when he turned on MJF last year, that people saw big things out of. And that hasn't materialized. So what do you blame that on? And how much of that is AEW's booking of him? And how much of that is Wardlow just not, as a character, taking himself to the next level?
I think the blame lies in both of those places. Hard to know percentage-wise where that is. He's somebody that I was watching that turn. I saw that, and I saw some of the matches right after that, and it just seemed like he was can't miss. A lot of the problems lie with continuing to hire guys that had to be a big deal. So what gets pushed aside for a little bit or a month here or there? Wardlow. And by the time they're ready to resume that, I think internally, I wonder if there was some surprise like, oh gosh, we maybe didn't strike while the iron was hot. I don't know. Speaking of not knowing if somebody's actually ready for competition at that level, Wardlow is somebody who, yeah, I wanted to believe that was possible because I'm cheering for everyone to succeed. But I'm not sure I really, really saw it. He's got so many of the right pieces, but I didn't know if this was going to be just another meathead or really one of a kind, well, meathead. So I also don't know that I get what this feud can do for him, but no matter how you try to make people react to Samoa Joe, he is literally always the coolest guy in the room. So you're taking Wardlow and you're put, if they want him to really, really be cheered here, Samoa Joe is a bit of an auspicious opponent.
And that's what I was going to ask next. You know, Samoa Joe, I think to me is effective whether he's a babyface or a heel. Do you like him better as a heel or as a babyface? I think your response to the previous question, you know, you seem to indicate that maybe a babyface is better for him because he even comes off cool as a heel. And so that, I mean, could hurt Wardlow's momentum as a babyface because there's going to be a pocket of the fans who cheer Samoa Joe as a heel.
You know, I'd like to say that I like him better as a heel because classically I think he gets away with it, but in the era that we've been in for quite a few years now, I don't think it's as easy for someone who's so cool like Joe to play a heel. And to take nothing away from his performance, he does everything right. But a certain kind of fan, and I think AEW has a lot of them, they really, really just want to cheer the great work. And on top of that, everybody wants to cheer somebody who's cool. And he's a really cool guy who's doing great work. And I think that's a tough hill to climb for Wardlow, who is still learning, and he's in an environment that sometimes isn't the best for learning just because of the small number of matches and the small number of crowds he gets to be in front of.
The tag titles are on the line in a four-way match where the Guns take on the Acclaimed, Lethal, and Jarrett, and then the winner of the Casino Tag Team Royale match that will be taking place on television this week. So, first of all, shocker that the Guns won the titles from the Acclaimed a couple weeks ago. Do you feel that's hurt the Acclaimed at all? I mean, they were riding high, one of the real success stories of AEW in 2022, getting over to the level that they did. And it seems like since they've lost the title, to me, I haven't gotten a good read on how the fans have treated them, because I think there was one night where they got a pretty tepid reaction, but then I think this past week, or 2 weeks ago, they had a really strong reaction from the crowd. So it's kind of dependent upon where they've been. So how surprised were you that they went away from the Acclaimed and switched the titles to the Guns there?
I actually was doing the post show with Wade that night. If you had told me at the beginning of the night that the Guns were going to win the championships, I would have said, I don't think so. If you had told me an hour in, I would have said, I'm sure they are, because they announced it as the main event. And I was like, there is no way that match is the main event unless something big is happening. And there's only one thing that could be. I think that the Guns are good throwback heels, and I think they're good at genuinely getting booed. And if there's one team that I'm not worried about staying over as a popular babyface act, it's the Acclaimed. They've got the intentionally stupid catchphrases. They got the fun raps, and I'm just not that worried that they can stay over. I don't think this hurts them. I don't think it even hurts the tag team championships. I mean, there are those who feel that way, and I get it. I was once a purist too, but you've got to have these low-level, slimy, cheating heels be able to do this now and again. And in the absence of realistic challengers, I don't think a few weeks away from the championships, because that's all it's going to be, they're going to win them back here, is such a bad thing. The only thing I don't like about this match is that as somebody who has to cover NXT every week, the one thing I'm really sick of the most is four-way tag team championship matches. I never have to see another one. I've seen a lot of them, and we're getting one.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, what do you make of the decision to do, rather than a straight-up rematch, to involve two other teams in it? Like, I'm not sure we really got a satisfactory explanation for that, at least to satisfy the fans of the Acclaimed, who probably would much rather see them win, if in fact they are going to win, in a more one-on-one matchup.
I mean, they can't give us the real reason, which is we got a lot of people and we got to put some of them on the show. It's a simple roster,
including Jeff Jarrett, by the way, who continues to boggle the mind with with his push and winning the Battle Royal the other night. I was like, boy, Jeff Jarrett. I mean, master of his craft, certainly, because how he keeps these opportunities, just it's strange.
No one politics like Jeff Jarrett. And I'll be
has to be it.
Honest. Like I didn't understand Jeff Jarrett getting pushed in 1998. Like honestly, I was like, I think it's over.
I mean, to quote Anchorman, I'm not even mad. I'm impressed. Like
the guy
he does it.
My brother and I, when we hang out every Monday, we'll talk a little bit about what's going on in wrestling. I'm more plugged in than he is. He's kind of WWE only, and even then it's mostly just pay-per-views. But I'll just kind of give him the rundown on stuff like New Japan and AEW and things like that. And late at night, sometimes we'll just turn on Peacock and watch some old episodes of Raw or whatever it is. And I just took one at random, and it had the first hype segment for Jeff Jarrett, who was using the company as a stepping stone to superstardom and country music. Yes. It's the classic story. How many Hollywood movies have centered around
this point?
Yeah, and then we watched the next episode, and there was another one. And these were long, long pieces. And he wasn't all that on the mic, so they were just kind of – it was really funny seeing the beginning of this and then thinking, oh, my God, this isn't over. I was watching 1993 episodes. We are 30 years later from where it was, and this guy's still a champion in a major organization.
Unbelievable. Well, again, all the more power to him. Can't hate him for that. Let's take a break from our Revolution preview and go to the phones, 515-605-9345. Press 1 if you'd like to talk. It is Ryan from Cumberland, Maryland. Ryan, welcome to Wrestling Night in America tonight. Thanks for kicking us off with your first question for us.
My first question is on the possibility Kenny Omega going to WWE. How many matches do you think he could work as a singles? Because the last time I saw him do an interview in Charleston, West Virginia, when I went to that show, said that he didn't think he had a whole lot left as a singles competitor and would be mainly doing six-man tags. I know he did one match, at the Tokyo Dome. He looked real impressive, but, it's pretty easy, a lot easier to do a match when you don't do a whole lot like Shane McMahon did. He would go out his matches, because he didn't have a real active schedule. So would he just be like a special attraction, do you think, if he came to WWE like a Shane McMahon, like have like a real light schedule?
Yeah, this is, a lot of rumors going around that WWE is going to actively pursue a lot of wrestlers in AEW whose contracts will expire this year. Kenny Omega is a name on the list, although I believe he's had some injury time added to his contract. So, I understand the allure of wrestlers just wanting to try their hand at WWE. It is the biggest wrestling company, the most well-known wrestling company. If you've made it here, you can make it anywhere type of deal. And so I understand that allure for a lot of wrestlers. For Kenny Omega, it's hard to see the fit. I guess the big question is, as Ryan alluded to, he's not going to be a guy who works a full schedule with house shows and everything. I don't think his body would hold up to that schedule. So the next question is, does WWE see him as a big enough star and a big enough attraction to where they would give him a more scaled back schedule, maybe not necessarily the Brock Lesnar schedule, but one where he just works TVs maybe and doesn't wrestle all that often. So I think that's really going to be the question that has to be answered before Kenny Omega goes to WWE or even, thinks about it. We're getting way ahead of ourselves, I think, here with this, but what kind of schedule will be afforded Kenny Omega? And that's going to be a big tell, Kelly, as to how WWE sees Omega.
Yeah, if Kenny believes that every time he goes out there and has a singles match, he has to do the Kenny Omega match, then I believe him that he's only got a few handful more of these left. If that's the match he has to have in order to feel satisfied with his craft, then that's true. If he went to WWE
and
worked
another
there,
that's another reason it's hard to see him going to WWE because I don't see him as a guy who's going to put it on cruise control for TV or for house shows or for like a dark match or anything like that. I think he only knows one speed, and even with a scaled back schedule, like what's that going to look like in WWE? So yeah, it's tough.
Yeah. And from there, like, I think the other part of the question is character wise, how does he fit in? And if you really, really try to put a finger on who Kenny Omega is, what his gimmick is, I think you kind of come up with more questions than answers. So WWE would probably try to, they'd want to mold him into their own image, but like what character works for Kenny that could also work for the schedule? I guess you could kind of do an outsider thing where it is just Kenny saying he's the greatest thing in the world and he's been the greatest thing in the world and this company has always played second to him. I mean, you could do something like that. I can see him doing a heel angle as an outsider. If they want to get Kenny over as a babyface in that company, I literally don't see a roadmap for it. Just none.
All right, back to you, Ryan, for your second question for us.
My second question is on Sami Zayn. Do you know if there's a reason why, like, Bret Hart, Owen Hart, Edge were never able to really get that same ovation that Sami Zayn has been getting recently?
I think there's something organic about Sami Zayn and his push and just his character. You know, he's this kind of goofball that people all of a sudden started taking seriously in some ways. And so I thought that organic nature, I think a little bit with Bret Hart, there was some organic groundswell. I don't think it was ever necessarily to the level of Sami Zayn, but you know, when WWE pivoted from the Hulk Hogan era of that size and that type of skill set for their main attractions to the Bret Hart guys, you know, part of that, it wasn't a push necessarily by the fans. I mean, it was WWE trying to sweep a lot of those bodies under the rug in terms of, you know, they didn't want them with the steroid trials going on. They didn't want to they didn't want to have those wrestlers front and center. So it was, you know, it was the right choice to go with Bret Hart, but the reasoning maybe wasn't what you would like to see. But with Zayn, it's just kind of this storyline, which was never meant to reach this level, sort of, you know, the storyline itself with the Bloodline is super successful. And then you put in this Sami Zayn element to it, and it just makes everything so much bigger. And I think that's a big part of the reason this has had the success it's had in terms of crowd reaction, Kelly.
You know, what I was going to say rather glibly was Bret and Owen didn't have that response because they didn't have their own Bloodline story. And it's that simple. And then I realized they did have their own Bloodline story. They were the Bloodline.
How Owen turned on the Hart family. It was after, you know, after that Survivor Series.
Mm-hmm.
With all the Hart family was involved.
So all throughout 97, where it was a five-person heel team, I think that's 97. Yeah, because it ended with, well, Survivor Series and Bret. But they were in their own Bloodline story, and the guy opposite them was getting the biggest reactions we've ever heard in wrestling. So Sammy, it just seems like no matter where he goes and no matter where he is on the card, it seems like he's always in well-written storylines and well-thought-out storylines, no matter where he is, what side of the ledger he is. The funniest thing to me about WWE being worried about his popularity, and I don't know how worried they really are, worried about the popularity of him going into this WrestleMania is you just want to shake him and be like, he's popularity because all this work you put in. Like, you successfully did what a company is supposed to do. This is a one-year storyline with a built-in reason for people to want to see Sammy specifically beat him. And Cody Rhodes is a guy who won a Royal Rumble. And Cody, I think, is doing fine. And I think he'll get cheered. This is not a Roman situation from 7 years ago, 8 years ago. But, it's an organic story and one that people want to see paid off because that was the story. Cody's not the story.
And I think Cody is smart enough to know what the situation is and how to avoid the pitfalls that Roman Reigns ran into when people wanted Daniel Bryan over him. And we've seen already how much better WWE and Cody Rhodes have performed in that situation, right? Obviously, a certain percentage of the fan base wants Sami Zayn, but Cody Rhodes and WWE's writing have made him a compelling character in his own right, and he's acknowledged Sami Zayn, right? He's on Sami Zayn's side. And so that's preventing a lot of the fan backlash, I think, as well. Let's go back to Ryan for your third and final question for us tonight.
I have a final question. It's an impact question. I don't know if you caught the storyline, but Barry Horowitz recently picked up a victory over Johnny Swinger. Do you think there's any possibility that we could be seeing people like James Ellsworth and the Brooklyn Brawler maybe battling Johnny Swinger, because Johnny Swinger seems pretty desperate to get this huge winning streak so he can get a title shot? Do you think they would go that far to try to acquire those wrestlers?
So I am about a week and a half behind on my Impact watching, but I did watch some today, and I did see Barry Horowitz defeat Johnny Swinger from 2 weeks ago. Barry looked pretty limited, I will say that. He was moving pretty gingerly in the ring. So, it depends on how far they want to take this Johnny Swinger storyline and him being desperate to get a victory. It's fun to see these jobbers of yore come back and get one last moment in the spotlight. They're not going into the WWE Hall of Fame. They're not going to be brought back on Legends Night. So it's a nice, I guess, acknowledgement of the work that they've put in over the years. So I was happy to see Barry Horowitz. I popped big for his win over Body Donna Skip when he got upset. So I'm all for that. Kelly, I don't know if you have been keeping up on Impact or the shenanigans going on with Johnny Swinger. It's worth noting he was distracted by the Demon making his return, the WCW Demon, and that's what distracted and allowed Barry Horowitz to pick up the victory. So, yes, I can't believe we're discussing this in 2023, but here we are.
I'm not plugged in, but we're 15 minutes removed from talking about tag team champion contender Jeff Jarrett. So, so what's the difference? You know, Barry Horowitz won a match at SummerSlam 95. Where's his tag team title shot in AEW? I am not plugged into to Impact. It's been quite some time since I have been. Weird stuff like this almost makes me want to put another company on my plate, but I just don't know where I'd fit it in.
Check the YouTube highlights for the Barry Horowitz. I don't know if it's if you're really struggling to fit it in, I wouldn't set aside 2 hours of your time if you're just looking for Horowitz highlights, as I call them. Check out YouTube for that, as I've literally just started calling them right now. Ryan, thank you for the phone call tonight. Appreciate you as always.
Thanks for taking the call.
Absolutely. Let's go back to our Revolution preview. One of the other guys who, you know, I talked about at the outset, kind of the theme of what we're talking about here is potential baby faces at the top of the card in 2023 for AEW. And we have another one in Adam Page against Jon Moxley, Texas Death Match here. Has the ship sailed on Adam Page as a cornerstone babyface star for AEW? Because it almost seems like every time they go with him, they end up kind of taking the bricks out of the wall and starting to rebuild again. So is he a guy who is just too damaged by being at the top of the card already and not really excelling like some people expected in that role, or is there still time to rebuild him into that?
Well, work has to be done, because when I mull over AEW roster and the top of the card in my head, I kind of have to remind myself that he's there. And that's very strange, because I have not missed a single match in New Japan for 7 years, and he was wrestling there regularly for much of that time. I have seen a lot of Hangman Page matches, and I saw him go from promising blue chipper to somebody who was showing up in the G1 Climax, the very grueling round robin tournament, and doing one last tournament there before he came over. So, I mean, nobody's been pulling harder for him than I have. And I was in the audience at Full Gear when he won that championship, and Wade and I were in the media scrum, and it just feeling being there for that was really cool to me. And now it just seems like he's not there. And, but I don't know what to expect out of this match with, well, I know what to expect, which is like $7 of blood for, you know, on an Irish whip on an arm drag. I don't know. It'll be a point where it doesn't seem like it's warranted yet. But as a long way of answering your question, I don't know if he can. It seems like if he settles into the part of a role player, then it's almost just sad. But I don't know. Maybe he's become like Kane, the top of the card guy who always loses to literally all those other guys at the top of the card. And it seems like he's way too young for that. So hopefully they got another bullet in the chamber.
The one thing I really liked about this feud is the intensity. It's felt organic. It's felt authentic. And, you know, Jon Moxley excels at that. It's seemingly, especially in the match with Kenny Omega, it's almost been a struggle to get Page to that level. But I thought he's done a really nice job here in the build-up.
Yeah, and if you want someone who feels authentic, you can't do better in this generation than Moxley. He really is the best at that. Perhaps Hangman gets a rub from that. Hopefully, even more than that, he learns something from it, because he still does have kind of a, I don't know if it feels calculated, just feels, I don't want to say dishonest. He just doesn't pop as that real dude that they really want to present him as. Not every night. It seems like it's inconsistent there, whether that's him holding back because he's not sure of himself. I don't know, but it's easy to make that connection because he talked a lot about his own self-doubt, even going so far as to use that in his storylines as champion.
The Elite versus the House of Black for the Trios titles. I would expect a really good match here, Kelly. This is kind of one of those matches that I know there's a storyline behind it, and I know that the House of Black has been turning on and turning off the lights and all that kind of stuff, but this is just one of those matches that you just sit back and, you know, it's not a Roman Reigns soliloquy match where, you know, he's literally telling the story during the match. You know, he's advancing the storyline verbally in the match. This is just one of those where you're just going to sit back and, I guess, put the storyline out of your head and just enjoy the match, I assume.
Yeah, and I think this feels like a show opening match to me. I don't know that they put Kenny Omega this early on the show, but it does feel like that super hot show opener that could possibly work against them, because I'm sure it'll be one of the best on the card. I just really like the trio of the House of Black, because all three of them bring such different things to the ring, no matter who's in the ring. I do a heat segment on Matt Jackson, and he's got to just, every time he's starting to figure somebody out, the heels change what they're doing, and Brody King comes in there and just slaughters him for a while. I've seen a lot of Brody. He's done some New Japan tours as well. Really hoping that they figure out a way to get him in the G1 someday as well. God, and Malakai Black. I kind of want everybody in the G1. That's going to be, if you have me on enough podcasts, you'll be, yes, indeed. Oh, and yeah, I think this should be a lot of fun, storyline or not. This is gonna cook. So I think this is, you heard it here first, and probably not first at all. This is the opener of the show.
The women's title is on the line in a three-way between Jamie Hayter, Saraya, and Ruby Soho. A lot of this has been built around the Saraya Toni Storm heel team versus Ruby Soho et al., who, you know, Ruby finds herself on the AEW Originals team for some reason. But how do you think that storyline has progressed so far? Because that's going to be play a big role in this match, I think.
It just gets so little TV time. And as somebody who drops in and out of these shows and then reads recaps every now and then, it just doesn't get the kind of time that I think it needs. Obviously, Saraya is somebody that they had earmarked as a babyface for when she came in, and that didn't work out. And, you know, just kind of seeing the act, it shouldn't be a surprise that that's how it worked out. I want to be so into this match because I was so into Paige when she was Paige early on. And Ruby's great. And I like what I've seen of Jamie. And I don't know. I don't know what else you say here other than AEW doesn't seem to have any plan for doing more with the women than they have been for the last 2 years.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of the actual storyline, I'm just not a fan of it. I don't know. Yeah. You know, the whole spray painting on it seems so 1997. It's not really original. I think that at this point, Paige, you know, Saraya is probably better suited as a heel considering what kind of content we were getting out of her as a babyface. So at least the course correction was the right call. I just don't know if building the storyline around, you know, you guys are invaders from somewhere else and we've been here building up. I don't know if that's really enough to carry this momentum of the match here. But I don't know. We'll see. I think it'll be a good match. Jamie Hayter has done really well as a champion. She's another one who's really kind of organically become a fan favorite. And so I think she's earned it in a lot of ways. So really looking forward to that one. And then we have the main event. MJF versus Bryan Danielson, 60-minute Iron Man match for the AEW World Championship. This is a pretty, you know, they've laid this story on really thick, and I think MJF's character is one of the most, I don't know if three-dimensional is the right term for it, but every promo he gives, it's like more and more background on who he is. I think back to the promo he cut, you know, talking about switching places with his high school girlfriend after he had crashed their car. And it's just little stuff like that that builds on itself, the stories that he tells in his promos that further cements him as this just unlikable cad. And I think for that reason, this is one of the more interesting matches. It's 60 minutes. You'd think it would be playing right into Bryan Danielson's hands. So it gives the babyface the advantage here, the babyface challenger on top of that over the heel. So the psychology seems a little backward with MJF, you know, trying to prove that he's a top-tier level wrestler in the same way that people talk about Bryan Danielson. It's just interesting the way that this has come together that way.
I think that MJF, as weird as it would have been to predict a match like this a few years ago, I think MJF is the kind of character who's really well suited to these Iron Man matches and the kind of heel who's really suited to them in sense of storyline, because he can do and will have to do a lot of stalling, a lot of running, a lot of just a lot of creative ways to get out of trouble, a lot of resting, I think that this can really work for him, and we can watch Brian continue to descend into madness as he's trying to chop down MJF in so many different ways. I'm so compelled by this. I was already compelled by this as a seeming in-ring mismatch, and then to add this Iron Man angle onto it, it is not what I saw coming for this particular feud, but I just think that there are a lot of interesting ways to tell this. MJF obviously is doing things on the mic that people have really never done. And that, again, that particular promo you were talking about with the dead girlfriend is the night that I was covering that with Wade. And we talked at length about that and how are we supposed to take, even in a kayfabe sense, are we supposed to think he's horrible because he did that? Or are we supposed to think he's horrible because he's wasting our time with a story that's clearly untrue just to get a rise out of us? And I think it works either way, no matter what we're supposed to think in a kayfabe sense. I think that so many of the wrestling purist kind of fans are so up in arms about MJF being a champion. And I think that they can't even recognize that they dislike MJF for all the right reasons. This is what wrestling used to be. and it's been so long since wrestling was like this, that when it finally is with guys like MJF and even Roman, they don't recognize it as the good kind of disliking somebody. So, I'm fascinated by how this match is going to play out.
I think you brought up a really interesting point too about these MJF stories that I talked about, is you don't know how much of them are true, how much of them are embellished, how much of them are just flat out lies. I mean, that's part of the MJF character. He will do and say anything to get what he wants. So when you hear these stories, you have to say, okay, what's the motivation of this character now to tell this story and try to determine whether or not it's true? And you never really learn whether it's true or not. That's not really the point, as you mentioned, because it serves the same purpose whether it's true or not. But I think that's one of those, an added dimension to this character that makes it a lot more well-rounded of a character than any others or many others that you see in professional wrestling these days. So that is AEW Revolution. And again, we will be back Sunday night, next Sunday, after Revolution goes off the air. God willing, it's still on Sunday. whenever that happens, we'll be going on the air, taking your phone calls and emails right here on Wrestling Night in America. But for now, we go back to the phones. It's the 410 area code. Reverend Keith from Baltimore, Maryland. Reverend Keith, welcome back to Wrestling Night in America tonight.
Thank you for having me back. It's always a joy to talk with you, Greg, and always a joy, Spooky Milk.
Thank you. I love that you always call me Spooky Milk. It's one of my favorite things.
Listen, I want to keep in line with the AEW prediction. Now, getting back to Hangman Adam Page, I think that the reason why his stock continues to fall is because he caters to a certain dynamic or a certain demographic, I might add. I think when he was doing had the drinking character and he was coming out with the cowboy stuff, and you know what I'm talking about, he caters to that certain type of demographic. The way they are positioning him now with Moxley, it's kind of difficult. Because it's like, okay, Mox teeters borderline heel. You know, he's like a tweener, if you will. Okay. Then you've got Hangman, who we're supposed to cheer for, but, you know, he comes off as heelish himself sometimes, i.e. when he had the first interview with Renee. You know, so it's kind of weird. I think that the only way you can, as a booker – or a writer, get Hangman Adam Page back up to that main event status, you would have to turn him heel and keep him heel. You know, you don't necessarily have to bring him back to that drinking man's persona. But, make him be a heel. You know, that's the only way you're going to get Hangman back up there. Because he's not, to me, you know, he can wrestle. He can bring it. He can go 50 minutes, 30 minutes, 20 minutes. But he lacks that overall baby face demeanor, so to speak. You know, I liken it to like what you were saying earlier about Ricky Starks. Ricky Starks is like the Carmelo Hayes of AEW. He has it. He has everything, the look, the charm, the body, the charisma, you know. But when it comes to Hangman Page, he's more of a wrestling man's wrestler. You know, back in the days of when we had the NWA, the Dick Murdochs and guys like that, you know, the Harley Races, he kind of reminds me of guys like that. So I think in order for his stock to rise, you need to make him a heel. What are your thoughts of perhaps turning Hangman Page heel?
I think that's a little tough because one of the hallmarks of a heel, Kelly, generally speaking, is they have a confidence about them to the point where it's an overinflated ego. And they've built this Adam Page character to be the anxious millennial cowboy, right? So, you know, he's full of self-doubt and he's full of all these feelings that it would be tough to turn those off and turn on another set of characteristics that would make him a heel. Not impossible. We've seen guys go between heel and face before when we thought, how are they going to pull this off? And they do it, and it's not always successful. It's not always well explained. It's not always a smooth transition, but they've done it. So I'm not saying it's impossible. I just wonder what damage it could do to the character given how much time they've invested in this version of Adam Page right now.
Well, I can see a means to do it, and it's actually through everything they use to build his babyface persona. And I think that the turn would have to take place mid-match, have this be like a Bret Hart, Steve Austin type situation. Maybe not a double turn, but a heel turn within the confines of the match. And a match against Moxley is the kind of place where this kind of thing can happen. And Moxley's expecting this virtuous opponent. And in order to get the win, Page has to go real dark, has to cheat, has to do something different. And he can win. By the way, I don't know if I want this or if I would do this. I'm just saying here's a roadmap. And then his follow-up, his explanation is something along the lines of, hey, I was riddled with self-doubt, and everyone stood around me, propped me up, told me I was great, and you know what? I finally listened. I am. I'm better. I'm better than that. And it turns into, like, he's unable to internalize it as pure confidence, and it becomes pure narcissism. Mm-hmm. I can see a road to heal Adam Page, which I haven't really seen because he was in Bullet Club, but it was at a time when they were like the whole group always kind of leans a little bit wherever the leader is. And there are guys even within the group who are more or a little bit less heelish. And he was there at a time where they were primarily cheered. So I haven't really seen him work heel, but I think it's not a terrible idea. The idea of turning him heel to get him there. And I can kind of see a way for them to do it. So I will cautiously co-sign on what Keith is suggesting here.
All right, Reverend Keith, your second question for us tonight.
Thank you, Spooky Milk. Now, I'm going to share something with you. You know, I'm a Ring of Honor historian, and I'm close with various Ring of Honor wrestlers. I can honestly tell you I followed Adam Page from day one. He has experience as a heel. You know, he has teamed with B.J. Whitmer, and he used to be with Truth Martini at one point. So he can do it. It's just a matter if the bookers will allow it. And I just think right now, the way his stock is declining, I think that's the only way you can get him back up to that championship level. You know, and I think we would be in for a shocker. I think he could pull it off. So we'll see. That's just, you know, Reverend Keith's notion. But I'm glad that you second that. Now, moving on, I do want to say that MJF is going to have to bring it in this match with Danielson because, as you just said, you know, it's a shocker that they made this a 60-minute Ironman match. And 60-minute Ironman matches have their highs and lows. You know, they typically start off pretty low, and then they build to a crescendo. Now, MJF has proven over the past 2 years that he can wrestle when he wants to, i.e. in his match against Darby Allin, Orange Cassidy. You know, he can bring it when he wants to. So he's going to have to bring it because I know Danielson's going to take him to another level. Now, it would be a shocker to see MJF's title reign come to an end, which I doubt. I'm almost certain that he'll retain. But it will be interesting to see how they pull this off because once this feud with Danielson ends, it makes you wonder who's going to be next in line to challenge MJF if he retains. I haven't seen them place anyone else at that level right now. What are your thoughts on who the next number one contender could be should MJF retain next Sunday night?
Well, that was kind of the theme of our preview of Revolution, right? It was looking for the next top babyface. You know, I think – I know we're talking about Adam Page as a heel. I think if he wins the Texas Death Match against Jon Moxley, I think he's got a good argument to make to be a contender for MJF's title. I think the other Adam Cole, who is not on this card, who is cleared from his concussion and who really cut a very strong babyface promo when he came back, I wouldn't be surprised to see them go that direction. You know, some of the other guys we talked about, Kelly, like Wardlow and Ricky Starks, they're probably not ready to jump into that fray right now. It's going to take a little bit more build for them to get there. But, you know, Reverend Keith's scenario here, MJF wins. Who do you see next for him?
Yeah, I see that with Adam Cole, too. My instinct is to say that he's going to be a little bit more long-term, and maybe they're using – I mean, they can go long-term. They're 3 months between major shows, but in the interim, Starks or Page winning their various matches. I mean, these could be de facto number one contenders matches. They can either, if they don't want to see if those guys are ready for that spot in a pay-per-view yet, they could always do their stories in the interim on TV. So I think we've got it between those three guys, assuming MJF continues this title reign, and I do. I think that between Starks, Page, and Cole, we've got our guy. I'd like to say again that Wardlow's among them. I just don't see that for him right now.
All right, Reverend Keith, your third and final question for us tonight.
Now, I'm pivoting to Jade Cargill. I know her match is yet to be defined and or announced for the Revolution. I feel that it's time to pivot her to the more credible stars in the women's division because it's to the point now where she's wrestling the same people over and over again. You know, your AEW, your Dark Elevation crew, your Dark crew. She needs to wrestle people that are higher up on the card as far as the women's division are concerned in order for her to establish more credibility and get more looks on her title reign. Because right now it's just padding numbers. With that said, and I'm going to leave you with this thought, who do you think could step up to Jade Cargill and give her a quality match, not just any match, but a quality match on the Revolution card? And I'm glad that we've agreed on the first two thoughts for tonight, and I'm going to go with Starks, Adam Cole, just those two. I'm leaving because, again,
okay.
Hangman Page will probably turn heel. Mark my words. He will turn heel, right. So that'll leave Starks and Adam Cole. I love Adam Cole. I love Adam Cole. I'm hoping that Adam Cole will be the one to dethrone MJF. But sticking with my point, who do you guys think that could step up to Jade Cargill next weekend? Thanks for taking my call. Have a lovely week. God bless.
Take care, Reverend Keith. Thanks for calling in. You know, when they were first matched up several months ago, I floated the idea at the time to have Willow Nightingale knock off Jade Cargill and be the first to make her lose. I'm going to stick with that. I don't see any change. I mean, Jade Cargill has been running on a treadmill since then. Willow has picked up some momentum, you know, teaming with Ruby Soho, teaming with some others, and putting on some nice performances herself beyond where she was at the time that I thought she should beat Jade Cargill. So I think she's only improved her stock. And I think the fact that Jade and Willow are diametrically opposite in terms of personality and who they are and what they represent, I think that loss would really get under the skin of Jade Cargill in a way that would be fun to see play out. So I'm going to stick with my original prediction from months ago, or my original, I guess, not prediction, but suggestion that it be Willow Nightingale to knock off Jade Cargill.
And I don't know if I have that name that I want to see knock her off. I just, it's hard to talk about Jade without pointing out, man, it would be really nice if this act that has so many of the pieces of superstardom in place was in a place that was better for actual, real, honest development. And hopefully they've got, I mean, they got the number of people there, the number of, you know, they're invested in her, but you need reps. And I want to believe she isn't just Goldberg light. And I can say that because I never liked Goldberg. It just, when we saw that he couldn't work a longer match, what did we have? I would like to see her work some longer matches. I'd like to see all the women work longer matches, though. If I have to choose some names of people that I think could feud with her and give her something to really sink her teeth into, Serena Deeb and Mercedes Martinez, they're both good for that kind of feud. I think that's exactly the kind of thing that they should be there for. I would like to see both of them do that. I'm not looking for either of them to be the one to knock Jade off, but I think long-form feuds with either of them and longer matches would be something. I can't believe the questions about Jade are so unchanged from how they've been for a year. And the act is just where it is, still where it is. And it's like the championship doesn't even need to be there. She's just, like you said, on a treadmill.
Yeah. All right, let's dig into some emails before we go back to the phones. Got a couple more calls to get to here, but this is one that is from Zach in Texas, and this is about Revolution and WrestleMania. He says, "Fellas, the disparity in wrestling quality between these two upcoming shows is absurd if you really think about it. I'm not sure there's a match on the Revolution card that looks like a bad match. On the other hand, the Mania card is set to feature Dominic Mysterio, Omos, Bray Wyatt, and Logan Paul. WWE could get away with this when there wasn't a pay-per-view a few weeks beforehand that will completely show it up. I frankly expected better of Triple H. The takeover shows he booked were must-see. As it is, Gunther and whoever his opponent is, as well as Bianca and Asuka, are going to have to do some heavy lifting to make this show passable, especially considering the crowd-preferred face isn't in the main event again." Honeymoon's over for Triple H, I think, Kelly. That lasted a couple months at best. But, you know, I will say that Logan Paul versus Seth Rollins, if that is the direction, is probably going to be a good match. Logan Paul has been in some pretty good matches himself. So I wouldn't lump him in with Omos and Bray Wyatt for sure. But, yeah, I mean, you know, the thing is, too, you're catering to very different audiences, right? And I know Dave Meltzer has this in the Wrestling Observer every once in a while. He'll say, you know, like, 9% of people who purchased this WWE pay-per-view also purchased an AEW pay-per-view. Now, granted, that's just pay-per-view buys. It doesn't take into account, you know, streaming and stuff like that, where it's more apt to be a crossover. But that does give you an idea that the audience for these two shows or these two promotions does not really cross over as much as maybe we would think, because we're kind of in the trenches covering both of them. So is that a big problem for WWE, that there might be that disparity in terms of match quality between these two shows?
Absolutely not. If anything, it's a problem for AEW that they're continuing to cater to the kind of wrestling that fewer people engage with. And I love great work rate wrestling, no nonsense wrestling. I love it, but it is a minority thing in comparison. And you can have both, by the way. But story driven, character driven storytelling is what keeps fans around and fans at large. It's questions like this always kind of make me smile, because it's not like WWE is trying to put on a show with the wrestling quality of AEW and just failing. They're not trying to do it. There is no attempt to put on this always running at 11, turning up the volume to 11 for every match, every minute of every match. That's not the intent of WWE. They're approaching shows differently. So as for the names, yes, you cannot lump Logan Paul, who's a pretty good wrestler, in with Bray Wyatt and Omos. And I would also say you can't lump Bray Wyatt in with Omos, because Omos is really, really bad. And Omos is just there as it's going to be a very short attraction. I'm not worried about that. I'd rather not see it. But it'll be a short attraction. And as for who's going to be facing Gunther, it looks like Drew. And indeed, that can do some of that heavy lifting. But as a question, I just don't even know how to approach it, because it's not a swing and a miss. They're doing something different.
Next set of questions is from Roe H. He says, hello, Greg. Was wondering, do you think once Reigns drops both world titles, if they'll be split again? With news about Triple H having buyer's remorse on some of the talent coming back, can't help but wonder if Raw and SmackDown having world titles can create more challengers like the U.S. and IC titles have. Also, do you think we'll ever see a return of the Cruiserweight title? And then the next question is, Roman Reigns' long reign as champion started with the Universal title. He won the WWE title last year. Any reason why it's combined, and couldn't WWE run with just the long Universal reign while allowing the WWE title to be on Raw? So basically the same question, I think, asked a different way is, you know, will the titles be split again? And that's a question that comes up quite frequently. I think I don't really understand. I was not in favor of combining them to begin with. I think the one sort of byproduct of that is we've seen an increased focus on the U.S. title and the Intercontinental title on both brands, because not only are the world titles combined, but they're rarely seen. Roman Reigns has scaled back his schedule such that he's often not at TV. So you do need some titles to be the focus, and, you know, building a secondary title up to where you can have those title matches as main attractions on television is just a smart thing to do. So they've done a really nice job about that. I hope that the titles are broken up after Reigns loses them, although I don't know how you'd go about doing that. I don't think Cody Rhodes would willingly say, you know, I'm going to give up one of these titles and give somebody else a chance. I'm not sure that makes a lot of sense to me. And that's part of the reason I didn't really like them combining them in the first place. As for the other question, no, I don't think the Cruiserweight title will be back anytime soon. I think Triple H has a little bit more of an open mind to those wrestlers, but it's been brought back and buried so many times. I just think, you know, the law of diminishing returns is in effect here, and I don't think anybody would take it seriously coming back another time. So your thoughts on the potentiality of a Cruiserweight title rebirth, and then whether or not you think the titles will or maybe even should be separated once Reigns loses them.
I do agree with you on the Cruiserweight Championship. I don't think it's coming back anytime soon. I just don't know that any current American wrestling company knows how to do weight class championships. It just doesn't seem like that's the approach. Or I don't know if it's that they don't know or if they just will not commit to it. Using
I think
New
MLW
Japan as,
does them to some success, but I'll be honest, I'm not really up to what they're doing.
Oh, yes, and I'm not up to what they're doing now. I jump into their Battle Riot every year because I'll watch pretty much any Royal Rumble that you put in front of, like, no matter who's in it. I'll watch them all. So that's about when I jump into MLW. But by and large, like on a major scale, we haven't seen a sustained – we haven't seen a championship last long in that kind of weight division since WCW was around. So it's using New Japan as a template, it can easily be done. And they've got some of their biggest stars and, gosh, arguably one of their top three stars. Maybe bigger as far as just pure personality and how much he's loved is Hiromu Takahashi, who is their – they don't call it cruiserweight – their junior heavyweight champion. It can be done if you commit to the divisions as divisions. But I just don't think WWE with weekly shows, weekly TV shows to fill can do that. And as you said, diminishing returns. Like every time they bring it back, people believe in it a little bit less. And I think that would happen here. The other part of this question, the championships. You know, when they put these together, I wasn't in favor of it either. But now that they're together, I think I just kind of – like, I guess I'm not ready for them to be split up. I just like the idea of one major champion per company. And in a company – I mean, both this and AEW, they have more than enough of a roster size to make it so these secondary championships are carrying TV, even if your champion isn't on, doesn't wrestle much, and neither Roman Reigns nor MJF wrestle very often. And I think that's fine. I actually think that's better than fine. Heel champions at the top of the company, I like them to be, no, you wanna see me, you pay for it. I don't think I'm ready for these championships to be split up because I think I like what they're doing with the secondary championships enough. But I also am open to whenever that time feels right, I think I'll recognize it. I think I'll recognize the moment where it's going to make sense for them to finally split the championships up again.
Okay. All right, let's go back to the phones. We got DJ from Miami on hold, and now he's on air. DJ from Miami, welcome to Wrestling Night in America. What's your first question for us?
Hey guys, how you doing?
Good.
My first thing is, I don't know, I watched Monday, and I saw Dolph Ziggler, and I had to shake my head. Poor Dolph Ziggler, like, he's been buried so much, been in tag teams, but I think Dolph Ziggler should go to EAW and maybe start fresh, new, before he retires. I mean, he's a great wrestler, technical wrestler, he takes all the bumps, he's a great heel. I think maybe, do you think, in general, what do you think is going to happen with him? Do you think, like, if he would ever go, do you think that he would be good in the main event picture, or what would you think of him in EAW?
A couple things here. I think you want to be careful if you're AEW about taking WWE mid-carders, especially ones who have been mid-carders for a long time, and shooting them to the top of your promotion. It's really one of the major complaints of TNA during much of its run is taking either WCW or WWE wrestlers who were kind of not main eventers, but treating them as special because they were in WWE or they were part of the Monday Night War era or whatever like that. So I think you've got to be careful there. Certainly Dolph is talented. I'd take nothing away from him in that regard, but AEW has such a deep roster. I'm not sure really where Dolph would fit in there. I do think he could probably be utilized better than he is, but I think he's a guy with some side projects too. Like I think he's, I don't want to speak for him and say he's okay with where he is right now in WWE, but he just kind of feels like The Miz, who's kind of a lifer in WWE, and they've settled into their role and they've come to accept it, and they, you know, do media and they play other roles for WWE that are just as important as what they do from bell to bell. So, Kelly, what do you see in your crystal ball if Dolph Ziggler were to go to AEW?
Outlook not so good. I think that he would, no matter if they had the best of intentions or not, and he could have a lot of bangers in that company. There is no doubt in my mind. He could put on great 20-minute matches with all kinds of guys on that roster that he's never faced. The problem is, do you want to show that these opponents have to – do you want to show that it takes them 20 minutes to beat a long-time lower mid-carder? I just don't think – not only do I not think Dolph would be a main event player in AEW, I think he would struggle to get TV time if he went to AEW. That has nothing to do with his talent level. It's through the roof. But he's very, very damaged, and at this point, I think I'd be surprised if he wasn't just a WWE guy forever.
I think it's also important to point out that he turns 43 this year. So while we think of Dolph Ziggler as this young guy, like, he's been around he's been on the main roster of WWE for probably in excess of 15 years now. So, you know, his bump card is filling up too, especially with as many house shows as he's worked over the years. So he's not in the prime of his career anymore either. I think that's one thing we have to take into consideration as well. All right, DJ, back to you for your second question for us.
Yeah, real fast. I just said that because put him in the main picture because he was a main of, you know, he had the championship. That's why I said that. So, you know, I just feel like he would be good over there. I don't know why. I feel bad for him. But my second thing is going into Cody Rhodes. Everybody's loving Cody Rhodes. Like, this is a new star. Like, Triple H needs to wake up and creative say, look, this works. We can get a star. But, personally, I want a star built up into the company. Like, you know, I feel like Triple H is burying these guys, and I feel like talent needs to, you know, he knows he came up in the business. Talent needs to grow from up, and they, you know, they need more, you know, this and this and that. He's not doing that. Like, boom, Cody comes in, he's the star. But everybody's, you know, behind Cody, who's tried to bust their ass in WWE for years, and look where they are now. Cody's already getting the championship. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like if Cody...
Well, it's not a meritocracy. It is a meritocracy. It's whoever earns it becomes a star. It's not, well, this guy was in the company for this long, he deserves an opportunity. It's like you've got to earn it with performances and you've got to earn it with all this other stuff. And you know, Cody Rhodes has shown, even if it's not in WWE, he's shown that he can be a star. And WWE, as you said, is in desperate need of stars right now beyond Roman Reigns. And Cody is one of those guys. So, you know, I think that, yes, WWE could do a bit better job of having some foresight. This was a complaint during Vince McMahon's time in creative and starting earlier and building these guys into stars and being a little more consistent with their booking. But I think the fact that Cody Rhodes has come in and shot straight to the top is not a problem for the other wrestlers or even for creative. I think that's a good thing to bring in new blood like Cody in a, you know, in a situation where we've never seen him in WWE anyway, in terms of being a main eventer, because we've seen him in WWE at length. But I think that he's earned it, and I don't think he
It's not about Cody. It's just about, you know, creative, you know, it's just crazy. You know?
Well, yeah, I mean, look, creative is what it is, right? It's that process. So I agree with you in terms of needing to start earlier in cultivating these guys, but I don't necessarily agree that while this guy's been waiting his turn and Cody jumped to the front of the line, this guy should have a turn first. I don't think that's how it should work. Kelly, what are your thoughts on Cody Rhodes perhaps skipping the line and his push here and WrestleMania opportunity?
Ooh, got my call back just in time. Dropped my call, sorry. I think I might have missed some of the meat of that question, but Cody being in this spot, I feel like there's a dearth of guys that it can be. Obviously, there's the one, Sammy, that people know it can be. It seems like if they wanted to pull this trigger, they'd have Jey Uso in that spot as well, but it doesn't seem like that's right on the horizon. KO has been one of the guys who's frequently had to lose to Roman Reigns. I think it's maybe four times he's wrestled for the championship. It's at least three. I understand wanting things to be more homegrown and stuff like that. I just don't know. I don't know who this name is. And especially when Roman's had such a long reign that comes at the expense, I think it's difficult to get someone to that level when Roman is so far. He's just at a level where you don't buy anyone to beat him, not just guys like Cesaro where they got 1 month out of him, but you just don't know who can beat him at all. And I don't think that's a bad thing. I think it's great to have a champion that you think is unbeatable, because when he's finally beaten, it will be a big, big, big deal. It's just not possible to imagine somebody getting that three count on him right now. So,
yeah. That's a really good point, Kelly, in terms of, you know, you're kind of sacrificing some baby faces at the top to keep Roman's momentum going, to ride the hot hand, as they say. So you've got some baby faces who could have been bigger stars, but their moment came and went. They didn't get the big win that may have put them over the top, whether it's Kevin Owens, whether it's Cesaro, whomever it may be. And so that's sort of hurt the brand building, and I think that's why it hurts having just one champion. Because if you had another main champion on another brand, they could be seen as at least in some ways equal to Roman Reigns, and you wouldn't have had this path of babyface destruction left behind Roman. You could actually have some babyfaces with some main event level success building up at the same time you're continuing to build Roman as this top heel.
Yeah, I agree with what they're doing with Roman, with having a champion that's this unbeatable. But I do understand the negative byproduct of that to the babyface side at whole. And it requires a bit of a churn in finding new guys, and then also a churn in getting somebody main event ready again. So, I mean, thank goodness for somebody like KO, who can talk himself into the top of the card again, like very few people can. Because that's very valuable. They're going to need him there more than once, and apparently more than three times, as we've seen. But it can come in the form of babyface turns too. I think that it's hard to imagine that at some point Roman Reigns and Gunther will not face each other. But we got to see how they can turn Gunther before that happens, because he's spent a few minutes as a babyface, but for the most part, it just his in-ring style alone works best for a dominating heel.
Mm-hmm. All right, DJ, your third and final question for us tonight.
My first thing is going back into Cody. Okay, in general, carving out into Cody going winning, right? So the next WrestleMania after this, would you see Cody going through Brock or maybe Gunther or, of course, Bobby, but like, or do you see Cody have people coming up from NXT like Braun Breaker? You know, I'd love for him and Cody to take him under his wing and help this kid come up, you know what I'm saying, and stuff. Do you guys see that, or do you see Cody really holding in for just a little while, or do you see Cody holding in for up to next WrestleMania, and who do you think Cody will face the next WrestleMania? Do you think hopefully he'll help these kids coming up, you know, in NXT, or do you think that he'll just completely go through the you know,
yeah,
the course deals?
I think next WrestleMania is a little too far away to predict who Cody Rhodes is going to be fighting.
I mean, in general.
No, I don't know. It's too hard to say. Like, I don't know when Braun Breaker is going to come up. I don't know what plans they would have for him when he comes up. So I can't even generalize NXT or the usual suspects on the main roster. As far as how long his reign would last, Kelly, I think it would be a pretty significant reign. You know, I think that anyone who beats Roman Reigns sort of has to hold the title for a long time. I mean, just by the fact that I don't think you're going to waste the Roman Reigns loss that you've been building up for 2 years, in excess of 2 years, on someone who's going to hold the title for a short time.
Yeah, let me start by saying I don't think Cody's going to beat him at all.
Okay.
And maybe that's foolish, but I think it's more foolish to bet against Roman Reigns at this point. Because every time I've done that, I've obviously been wrong. but I actually don't think that's going to happen. If it does happen, I agree with you that it will be a long feud. Win or lose, I think his options are pretty similar to keep him, because if he loses, he won't just be one and done. He'll revisit that. He'll be a guy that Roman faces again. It won't be done here. So they'll either keep him in sort of involved with the bloodline, or maybe have him do some stuff with other big guys like Strowman or whoever. As far as the NXT idea and taking these guys under his wing, I guess I can see that. I will say that specifically, I don't think Braun Breaker has a lot of potential. He's just not that good. I watch him every week because I cover NXT, and I think he can have a long career in WWE. I don't think that he will be a guy who's in the main event scene. If at all, I certainly don't think he will live in the main event scene. Because he's been champion on NXT for a year now, and we don't know anything about the guy. His talk segments are still very, very bad. He could learn a lot backstage from a guy like Cody, but I think if he was to be brought up anytime soon, Breaker that is, I think that his best role would be as an extremely quiet bodyguard type. And I've been saying this for a while, like he could be Diesel to somebody else, Shawn Michaels. And I don't know who that Shawn Michaels is. I don't care who that is exactly. I just think that that would be an extremely good role for him to start and to give him the chance to actually really be able to spread his wings. Because he's never going to be Kevin Nash on the mic. Very few people are. Kevin Nash made it real like so few people have done before. But at least he could be the best Steiner on the mic. Which is, you know, a low bar, but he could do it. But yeah, I'm perhaps off the rails here just because Braun Breaker is somebody I have to talk about every week. So I'm very well in practice of doing it. But yeah, I think Cody, I'm not worried for Cody even if he loses here. But I suppose I am more worried than I was for Sami Zayn, just because the groundswell for him is so strong. I think that it remains. And Cody, as I said earlier on, he isn't the guy who worked his for a year towards it. He's a guy who came back from injury and won a Royal Rumble.
All right, DJ, last question for you. What do you got for us?
My last thing is everybody keeps on saying these things about the Bucks and Kenny wants to come over to WWE. Like, that's, I don't know why people are saying this. Cody left that place so he can get away from these people. It's like, plus these guys are hurt. And it's like, yeah, 10 years ago, they would have been great to come over. But not now. It's like, you know, I don't understand why they keep on trying to push this nonsense with these Bucks and Kenny coming to WWE. I understand it's more money, but these guys had money. You know what I'm saying? It's like, come on. Like I said, we need stars from, you know, what do you think? Like, what? I don't understand.
So, I don't, can you,
these guys
what,
are, you know,
the
hurt. Like, what are they going to really do in WWE, you know what I'm
well,
saying?
Well, you know, we talked a little bit about this earlier when we talked about Kenny Omega coming to WWE, Kelly, and it's, you know, it's definitely, and the Young Bucks are in the same boat in a lot of ways. You know, they're not going to wrestle a full schedule. They're probably not going to wrestle house shows. They're certainly closer to the end of their career than the beginning, but there is that attraction of just being in WWE. And, you know, for the Young Bucks, it's maybe wrestling the New Day or maybe wrestling, you know, getting away from the VP. You know, I think Cody Rhodes learned that being an EVP is a good experience, but it's not suited for everybody. And the Bucks and Omega, we don't really know how they feel. They may be finding that out as well. Maybe they just want to go back and be talent and try their hand at WWE for a year or two, knowing that they can go back to AEW if they wanted to. You know, but what's your take on the Young Bucks that in that question?
You know, honestly, my answer to the question is I think that their intent to go to WWE is completely overblown because it's just a good bargaining tactic. Like, if they want to get paid a little more, then there will be a rumor going around that that there's interest from WWE. That can only help them in terms of negotiating pay rates and the best pay they can get for the last for the twilight of their careers. And gosh, I guess it's weird to say that they're closer to the end, but that is true. So I don't know how real that is, the idea of that. The Young Bucks have gone through times where they were wrestling a lot of dates over the course of many different and many indies. They have never really done the WWE way of life, and I don't know if they want that, if they would welcome that or not. I certainly think they fit there better than Kenny does. I don't know why I feel that way, but I just do. I think that it's easier with their personalities to work them either face or heel than it would be for Kenny. Just a feeling I have about them. But I think most of the talk of them maybe going to WWE is just, it goes from idle speculation for fans, just fantasy booking, to a lot of it just being about how much money can they make if AEW thinks that there's major cause for concern.
All right, DJ, appreciate the phone call this week. We'll hear from you again soon.
See you next Sunday.
All right. One more email question and one more phone call. Let's get to the email question. This is from Azan. He says, "Dear Greg and Kelly, do you find it strange we're on the road to WrestleMania and we haven't had any names announced for the Hall of Fame yet? Do you see a possibility?" Oh, this is for the AEW Casino Tag Team Royale. "Do you see a possibility of a Joker team, Sting and Darby Allin in the Battle Royal and winning the four-way?" Possibly to them being in the Battle Royal, probably not winning the four-way, but I think that's a really interesting wild card team to put in that match. As for the Hall of Fame, look, the Hall of Fame, when they were selling tickets to the Hall of Fame ceremony itself, I think they had to get those names out and to get those tickets moving. But I think they're still doing the Hall of Fame like after a SmackDown taping or something like that. So it's less important to get those names out as early as they used to do. Pretty sure that's the reason. But Kelly, you can comment on those two topics.
You know, the Hall of Fame is something I really get into, but when they forget to do it or don't do it right away, like, I never even think about it at all. And have not thought about it at all until now. But yes, I agree with you. They're not putting butts in seats or selling anything real huge here in comparison to some years. So I think that's the reason to take a more lax approach. And that doesn't bother me. They still got a number of weeks. And if they keep putting in 6 to 8 acts every year, then who's left? I don't know. And as far as whether Sting and Darby could win that casino battle royale, I would have said no until Jeff Jarrett got into it. And and now I can see a situation where Sting and Jarrett are going at it. It's silly to say, but I could easily see that. Darby is somebody that they put on, I want to say, probably just about every pay-per-view they've run in some capacity. And this one has fewer matches on it as a matter of course, because we've got an hour-long one-on-one on this show, so there aren't going to be quite as many matches as we typically see on these, I'll just say, bloated cards that they put on. I hate to say it. I could easily see Sting and Darby Allin winning that casino battle royale.
All right, our final phone call this evening goes to the 478 area code. I believe this is Darrell from Georgia.
How y'all doing, Greg and Kelly?
Doing well, Darrell. Good to hear from you this week. What's on your mind for us?
Not too much. I enjoyed the conversation that you guys have given tonight. My first question to be about that potential, who should be should Cody beat Roman or not, and even bringing in Sami Zayn. I know when people look at the aspects, and I know fans today, some say a lot, most of the hardcore fans like Sami should have won and got and that thing like that. But I want to look at it in a different way, and I want to see what you guys think about it, about how storytelling means a lot. Like, not what you're doing if you're in a hot feud. Can you continue to build another feud after another feud after another feud and build a person up in that feud where it's interesting in keeping people going? I think that's why the Bloodline story has worked. So since they've been doing this, everybody who Roman has felt a feud with has been good story after good story after good story. And I know you have some people that you had, like the Drew. You got the Sami now that people want to win and stuff like that. And I don't think sometimes people look at how would this person do when they're not in the story with the hottest thing that was going, in which is Roman and the Bloodline, like Sami per se. What would his next feud be like if he would have beat Roman and you no longer feuding with the Bloodline? Can you tell an intriguing story? Would it be something intriguing? Would it be able to continue to keep the attention? Because a lot of people saying that he should win and stuff like that because they're into him feuding with Roman. He can't feud with Roman for a whole year and for this and that. He got to go on to somebody else. He got to have something else. Would you still be interested? Same with even Cody. Cody did good with Seth, then he got hurt. But that was a 3-time feud. Now it's a big number with him now to see how he does with Roman, to see should he even beat Roman? Can he build something that keep people attaching on? And once you complete the story of him winning the title, could he continue to interest people, just like how Roman has this time right here with the Bloodline itself? So my question to you guys would be this. If any one of those two or anybody else beat Roman, should they beat Roman? If you can't see if they – do you think they will be able to hold up just like how the Bloodline and Roman story has and be able to draw in interest to other people outside of himself like how Roman has with most of the people that he feuded with?
I think it would be tougher for Sami than Cody, because Sami has gotten over to this level because of his involvement with the Bloodline. I think to a certain extent, Cody was already over before he started feuding with the Bloodline. So the whole crux of Sami's being is tied to the Bloodline right now. So I could see him, if he were to beat Roman Reigns, I could see him continuing to feud with the Bloodline, whether it's Roman still, whether it's Solo Sikoa, whether it's Jimmy Uso, whomever it may be, until he loses the Sammy, had he beaten Roman, would have held the title and just kind of moved on and taken on all comers. I think he would have held the title, continued to feud with the Bloodline, and eventually lost the title back to a member of the Bloodline before he was able to get out on his own. Now, Cody Rhodes is different. I'm not ruling out the idea that he could end up continuing to feud with the Bloodline if he does win. But I think he's got a clearer path, Kelly, to feuding with others outside of the Bloodline if he does win at WrestleMania.
Yeah, I think that's true also. And I think this question also just kind of drives home the double-edged sword that is the Bloodline, which is everybody wants to see Roman get beat, but when he gets beat, then does the Bloodline TV story end? And nobody wants that because it's the best thing they've put on TV in so long. It's like Weird Al, I believe, said it best in the song Yoda. I know Darth Vader's really got you annoyed, but remember, if you kill him, then you'll be unemployed. Because once you beat the big bad, what's left? I've thought about that for quite a while, in that what does the Bloodline story look like, and does it live on in the same capacity once that belt is gone? Because it has some, I think this is better than the NWO, or at least more consistent than the NWO was, but it's very similar to the NWO in which it largely hinges on them having all this power as a small group over a much larger group of people on the roster. And once they lose that power, are they interesting at all anymore? But in terms of where they go from here, I think Greg was pretty well spot on. Cody he's not married to this storyline, so he can more easily pivot, whereas Sammy almost certainly would have to cool off outside of this story by facing more guys that are part of the Bloodline.
All right, Darrell, back to you for your second question for us tonight.
All right. My second question will be about something that you guys were talking about as well. Should the titles be split? I have to disagree. I think with you, Greg, you were stating that you think the title should split because you can have something for everybody, for other people to do. I felt like even back in the Attitude Era, titles were diminished, meaning they didn't have no like the title didn't mean nothing because how many times they switch hands. I don't think too many people can even tell a title run, just a strictly title run, not a title win, but a title run, if you had to defend the title match after match, that person could name or even care about, say what they cared about. And right now, I think the title, being that both of them put together, has meant so much more and added so much to that storyline that it was telling. And that's what I think that you like when you see, even in other sports, that's boxing, UFC, the guys who hold the title and get in fights after fights, it means a lot because that title means something. And splitting it, all you'll do again is de-emphasize the title. You'll have another title that probably won't main event, always be on the front, and you will de-emphasize the two other titles, which are the IC titles, the United States title, which I think with the emphasis on the regular title, those two titles have been lifted up. That's why I think he got another interest with Gunther and his reign and stuff like that, and what he's doing with Theory on the other side. So my question would be, I know you say you would like to see the title split back up, but can you say that it has been a good thing by having the title together because the title means so much more? and wasn't in the title reign before here all the way into the Attitude Era that you felt like that was a good reign that even though it might have been long, but it was a good reign that could compare to this title reign?
No, I definitely see the merits of having the titles combined. I think you can ask yourself, would Roman Reigns seem as powerful as he is if he was only the champion on SmackDown and there was some equal level champion on Monday Night Raw? And I think the answer is probably no. So I think it's allowed Roman Reigns to consolidate his power. It's allowed him to seem like a bigger deal than he otherwise would have. I don't necessarily buy the idea that the IC title is in a bigger deal because there's only one major title. Look, the IC title is on SmackDown, and it's sharing a home with the main title. So WWE can walk and chew gum at the same time. They just often choose not to. And of course, you know, what I mean by that is they can build up the Intercontinental Championship as a major title. At the same time, they also have a world title on the show, which is exactly what's happening now. Roman Reigns isn't defending it every week. He's not even on the show every week. But it's still, you know, the SmackDown storylines, the top ones, the main event ones, revolve around the world title, and yet they've been able to make the IC title also matter too. So I think if they can do it on SmackDown, they could do it on Raw, and they could still make the U.S. title feel like a big deal, even if they had a major title on that brand. So, Kelly, I understand. I think there are advantages to it. I just don't know if I'm sold that that's the right answer. So, you guys have gotten me to move a little bit in that direction tonight. I think that's a win.
All right, we'll get to there yet. I remain convinced that one major championship is the way to go. And I've been on the other side of the fence there too, just saying the roster is so big, the two shows are, if you keep them separate, then have those championships. But I kind of like just making that U.S. championship feel bigger in response to that. I think that the biggest issue here in terms of where those championships are is that SmackDown, the two-hour show, has those two singles championships, and Raw, the three-hour show, has the one major singles championship. So it leaves just a lot of space for guys with essentially nothing to fight for. I'll echo what Darrell said. I hated the Attitude Era as far as championship reigns and Vince Russo being convinced that it didn't matter who won or lost. The Rock, 8-time champion, 367 total days as champion. Not as long as one CM Punk or not as long as one-third. Well, yeah, I guess a little longer than one-third of the current Roman Reigns reign. But I think people would be surprised to learn that Rock didn't hold the championship for that many days. Yeah, I don't miss the hot potato championship days.
All right, Darrell, final question for us tonight.
Okay. And my final question will be something that I was watching earlier. I watched the interview that just came out earlier today with Bayley. I don't know if you guys talked about this earlier or anything, but it was very interesting that she had with Errol Hawani on the La Beachy Sports thing on YouTube. And she was stating how before she came back, and that first week of Triple H and he brought her back on SummerSlam, that how she was looking at it, she wasn't going to be coming back no time soon. And she, how it, the plans were had when Vince was there, that it looked like she would probably come back. If she did come back, it was going to be 4 months later and doing the same thing she was doing when there wasn't no fans there and stuff like that. And she didn't really want to go back to doing that because she was kind of in a dark place then and wasn't really feeling herself. And she thanked Triple H, she said, because she don't think she would have been coming back at that time right there, because she pitched this offer of having damage control and stuff beforehand and stuff, and this was something that she really wanted to do and she really had passion into doing as well. And it was just a good, intriguing video. I say people should look at it. But going off of that, do you think by you hearing somebody say something like that, and they were thinking that they wasn't going to come back, or Bayley persisted, and she didn't know what she was going to be doing if she did come back and stuff like that because they haven't told her anything, do they give you another look at her run right now that she says she's still trying to get into and trying to add more to because she want to make it so her and all three of them be able to do something big together and they can get their footing as well. And this has been her ideal and where she's going with it. Do this give you another aspect or outlook of everything from that moment by hearing the interview like that from her?
Yeah, I didn't hear the interview, but I have heard before that this idea of damage control she had brought up to Vince, and Vince didn't like it, and then, you know, Triple H takes over, and he was a little more, bit more receptive to it. So I think anytime you give talent ownership in a storyline or in a situation the way that they have with Bayley, you know, this is kind of her baby, I think you can sometimes tell talent's a little more invested in the story and things like that. That being said, I've kind of been disappointed in Damage Control's run, especially lately. I just don't think they've been as strongly booked as they could be. That being said, you know, I think there is, if this is a long-term direction, there certainly is time for them to do something else and add to the storyline and add some chapters to Dakota Kai and Io Shirai and Bayley and things like that. So the fact that, you know, this is kind of a project of hers, Kelly, I think, you know, I think it's a good thing. Like I said, giving talent that ownership of a storyline and allowing them to have some creative ideas and then running with them as a creative team is pretty cool.
Yeah, and one of the best things an incoming boss can do is empower some people to have that kind of creative freedom. And it doesn't have to be a lot, but you send a message to the entire roster that you come up with something, then you will be heard. And when management changes, there are going to be people who are big beneficiaries. And I think fans, I don't know why this is, but it sure seems like if you spend enough time online, which I unfortunately do, that fans seem to think everybody will be pushed if there's a different person on top. And it's just not that simple. There are going to be beneficiaries, and there are going to be people who did better under the old regime. But, yeah, I think just this is something – like giving that power to Damage Control to do this thing that that Bayley kind of wanted to set out to do sends a message not only to them but to other talents that you can be heard, I think. And regardless of how successful and how half-assed and inconsistent the push has been, setting aside that, I think it's hopefully been a good message to wrestlers that they will be heard.
Darrell, thanks for the phone call this week. Appreciate hearing from you.
All right.
All right, Kelly, appreciate hearing from you as well. Thanks for joining me here on the Revolution preview show of Wrestling Night in America. As always, before we let you go, take a moment to let fans know where they can follow you on social media and where they can find and when they can find your work for the Torch.
Yes, indeed. I do the recaps about every other week, but my kids are 18 and 15. Life happens, so we stay 50-50. We do them when we can. I do the recaps about half the time on NXT, and I host the PWT Talks NXT live show, and I host the VIP show NXT 8 years back, always going through some. We've been going through some real interesting times. We just passed the Sami Zayn era, the Blink It and You'll Miss It Sami Zayn Championship era in NXT, and we are firmly in the KO era of NXT right now. So fun stuff going on right there as well, and we also talk movies there. Find me on social media at Spooky Milk. I don't tweet very much because I hate Twitter and just being on Twitter. But I will respond to you if you tweet something at me.
As long as you respond to my DMs, that's all I care about, Kelly. That's how I get you on the show. So.
Very good about DMs.
Kelly, thanks for joining me again tonight. Really appreciate you hopping on tonight.
It's a good time, Greg, and I'll be here soon, I'm sure.
All right, thank you. And thank everyone for listening. Again, we'll be back next Sunday night after AEW Revolution with our show focused on your reaction to that show. So be a part of the show. Call in, email us next week. Love to hear from you because if it's Sunday, it's Wrestling Night in America.